Dr. William Luther Pierce. The year 2000. The Killing of Kayla.
Hello. A number of listeners have told me that I really must comment on the series of horrible murders of white people by blacks during the past 2 weeks. My initial response to these suggestions was negative. It's not the purpose of these American Distant Voices broadcasts to tell listeners what they already know. If the Jewish media reports something well enough for people to get the essential facts of what happened, then I'm inclined to leave it alone. In the case of these recent race murders, however, it is not entirely clear that the facts were presented adequately. Many people asked me whether or not the carjacker who dragged the 6-year-old white boy to his death in Independence, Missouri on February 22nd is black. They assumed that he is black because the murder occurred during a carjacking, which is an almost exclusively black crime, and also because the murderer wasn't shown on television. Americans have learned from experience that when the media refuse to show them the face of a criminal, it usually is because he is not white. There were many pictures of the victim, little Jake Robel, on television, but none of his murderer. Well, of course, the assumption was correct. Although most of the national media managed to avoid revealing the race of the murderer, several local newspapers in Missouri carried pictures of him. He was 34-year-old Kim Davis of Kansas City, a black criminal who looked as if he had just been pulled down from a tree in Africa. He was hanging around a sandwich shop parking lot in Independence, waiting for an opportunity to steal a car. When little Jake's mother drove up and got out of her car, leaving her 6-year-old son in the back seat, the black seized the chance. He shoved Jake out onto the pavement, but left the white child entangled in his seatbelt. As the black drove off, Jake's mother was trying frantically to free her son from his seatbelt and was screaming at the black to stop. But he ignored her and roared out of the parking lot behind the wheel of her car, with the child bouncing and scraping along the pavement. He dragged the child for more than 4 miles at speeds up to 80 miles an hour before white drivers were able to block the stolen car, pull the black out, tie him up, and sit on him until the police arrived. Of course, it was far too late to do anything for the child except cover his torn body with a blanket. Police, of course, marked and photographed spots along the route of the dragging where there were pools of little Jake's blood and pieces of his flesh, so that the photographs could be used later as evidence in the black's trial. Do you remember when 3 young white men dragged a convicted black criminal to his death in Jasper, Texas, 2 years ago? I'm sure that you do, because the media bosses made it a point not to let you forget. Over and over and over again, we saw on our television screens those little circles the police had marked along the road where they had found some of the victim's blood. Now, I will promise you that you never will see the spots the police in Missouri marked where little Jake Robel's blood was found. Those bloody spots won't be shown, nor will the black murderer's face be shown, because the media bosses want you to forget about the murder of little Jake Robel as quickly as possible. At least, little Jake's dragging received some news coverage for a day or two. That's more than 2 white women who were dragged to their deaths in carjackings got. Just a week earlier, on February 14th, 41-year-old Sandra Roberts was dragged to death in Kansas City. I'll bet you haven't heard a word about that, and you won't hear about it for the usual reason. Then there was the murder of Patricia Stansfield in August 1998. The 46-year-old white woman was dragged 2 miles to her death along a road in Streator, Illinois, by a black who was stealing her car. After the black killer, Christopher Coleman, had dragged Patricia for 2 miles while she screamed for mercy. He eventually stopped, cut her dead body loose, and left her in a roadside ditch before continuing on with her car. And if you didn't hear about this killing from me, you didn't hear about it. The media bosses imposed a total news embargo on the black-on-white standstill dragging, which occurred just after the white-on-black dragging in Jasper, Texas. They didn't want news about Patricia Stansfield's murder to detract from their massive publicity about the Jasper dragging. The murder of little Kayla Rowland in Michigan last week received more news coverage than the dragging of Jake Robel. But there was the usual media reluctance to let us know that the killer who shot the 6-year-old blonde, blue-eyed white girl to death in her first grade classroom was black. Most television viewers had to infer that he was black by learning from news reports that he had been living in a crack house and that he had used a pistol which had been stolen from a local business by one of his adult relatives. If we were lucky, we caught a brief glimpse of one of his very black relatives being led into a courtroom in chains, although we never got to see the killer himself. If we were diligent readers of news reports on the Internet, we might have learned that he already had been suspended from school 3 times in the first grade, once for stabbing a classmate. We might also learn that he had attacked little Kayla on the school playground the day before, and that when he pulled out a pistol and shot her in the neck, he told her, "I hate you." None of the news reports that I was able to find, however, came right out and said that he was black and habitually acted in a way so many other young blacks do in racially integrated schools, where they cause problems far out of proportion to their numbers. None of the news commentators asked why something hadn't been done to protect little Kayla from this juvenile monster with a record of assaults after his display of hostility and aggression against her the day before. They seemed much more concerned with explaining away the killer's behavior and treating him as a victim of society. About the only recent black-on-white killings which have received news coverage which even mentioned the racial element were the murders of 3 white men in Pittsburgh last week by a black killer who became enraged when a white repair crew failed to repair the door on his subsidized apartment fast enough to suit him, and who told everyone who would listen that he hated whites and wanted to kill all white people. It was pretty hard for the media to keep the racial angle out of that story. I have a prediction to make, however. The media will let this story die a lot quicker than they let die a couple of other stories about racial killings which come to mind. The story of Buford Thurl, for example, who wounded several Jews and killed 1 Filipino in Los Angeles last year. Or the story of Benjamin Smith, who killed 1 Korean and 1 black in Illinois. In fact, the Thurl and Smith stories really haven't been allowed to die yet. They remain grist for Hollywood's white guilt mill. And I'm sure that you're familiar with the technique used by the media bosses for keeping such stories alive. They use the old Watergate technique, the Chinese water drop technique, in which every day they breathlessly dribble out some new tidbit connected with the story. Or if they don't have any new tidbit, they just rehash all of the old tidbits. One way or another, they keep the story in the public consciousness long enough for it to sink in. After the story leaves the front pages, they remind the public about it with television documentaries every month or so. In the past year, there already have been several television specials featuring Buford Thurl and Benjamin Smith. I'm quite sure that during the next couple of years, we'll see dozens more television specials based on the escapades of Thurl and Smith. I'll also predict that we won't see any television specials about last week's murder of 3 white men in Pittsburgh by a hate-crazed black killer. Not even one, because they want us to forget about that as quickly as possible. We also will not see Mr. Clinton coming on television and giving us all a little sermon about hate in connection with last week's Pittsburgh murders, the way he did in connection with both the Thoreau and Smith incidents. What we did get to see on television after the murder of little Kayla Rowland, however, was Mr. Clinton pushing hard for more gun control laws, especially a law requiring trigger locks on guns in order to keep kids from using them. Are we supposed to believe that such a law would have kept 6-year-old Kayla from being murdered by her black classmate? Are we supposed to believe that black crack dealers will run out and buy trigger locks for all their guns if Mr. Clinton and his anti-gun backers succeed in having such a law passed? What we need is minority control, not gun control. And that brings us to the subject I really want to talk about today. You know, I could go on and on and on about black-on-white crime and the reluctance of the controlled news media to report it, because it doesn't fit their agenda of making white Americans feel guilty, of keeping white Americans morally disarmed and off balance. I mentioned three terrible crimes against white people which occurred within the past 2.5 weeks, but these black-on-white crimes are not the point. In a sense, they aren't even important. In a sense, I welcome such crimes. I welcome them because they remind us of a much bigger problem we have, and that is the destruction of our society, the destruction of our civilization, the destruction of our race by those who have deliberately brought about the conditions in America where 6-year-old white girls are murdered in their first grade classrooms by subhuman animals. Conditions where white women and children are dragged to their deaths by subhuman animals bent on stealing a car with total disregard for the lives of anyone who gets in their way. Conditions where a subhuman animal flies into a rage because white workers aren't fast enough in repairing the door to his rent-subsidized apartment, which he himself kicked in when he lost his key, and then begins murdering white people whom he blames for all his own inadequacies. What's important is that these conditions have been imposed on us deliberately, and we're all obliged to live under them, and they're getting worse, and eventually they will destroy our people. That's what's important. And if it takes the shooting of little Kayla Rowland in her classroom in Michigan to make us think about that, then little Kayla died for a good cause. If it takes the dragging to death of little Jake Robel along a highway in Missouri to distract us from our ball games for a few minutes and give just a few of us a chance to see the big picture, then it is worth it. I know that sounds terrible and heartless to people who are constitutionally incapable of seeing the big picture, to people who are incapable of thinking about anything except in individual and personal terms. All they can think about is poor little Kayla, poor little Jake, the poor fellows who were murdered by a hate-crazed black in Pittsburgh. What we must think about instead of what happened to little Kayla is that other little white girls like Kayla all over America, in most of the schools in America, are exposed every day to blacks like the one who murdered Kayla. That evil people in Washington and Hollywood and New York have deliberately imposed on our country policies which make it impossible for little white girls like Kayla to escape being exposed to blacks. Of course, most little white girls like Kayla don't get shot to death by 6-year-old primates who have been declared equals and given seats in their classrooms by evil men in Washington who know better. Many more are raped than are shot. Even more are lured into the hip-hop lifestyle, into the jungle culture of rap and filth and drugs promoted by the Hollywood and New York Jews who control the entertainment media, to which millions of little white girls like Kayla become addicted because it is fashionable to be addicted. And 30 or 40 years from now, all little white girls like Kayla, every little white girl in America, will be obliged to live in a society in which there is no protection at all, because whites will be a minority. A society in which interracial marriage will be the norm, encouraged by Hollywood even more than it is today. That's what the Jews of Hollywood and New York and the treacherous politicians of Washington who serve them are planning for America. That's why they always overemphasize the rare white-on-black crime stories and minimize the black-on-white crime stories. And that's why any incident, no matter how horrible or painful, which makes us think about the future, which alerts us to what is in store for us, should be welcome. When I see the Hollywood Jews presenting an interracial couple on television in an attempt to persuade young white girls that dating blacks is fashionable and is something they ought to try themselves, I'm angrier than when I read about the murder of a little white girl by a black classmate. In the long run, it's the interracial sex which is more destructive. And it is the evil men who have deliberately imposed on America the policies which brought about little Kayla's murder, who are more reprehensible, more deserving of hanging than the juvenile primate who shot her. As early as the 1920s, the Jews of America were openly and aggressively promoting their program for multiculturalizing us, for breaking up our homogeneous white society and making us instead into a cosmopolitan hash of various racial minorities which they could more easily penetrate and control. I said, as early as the 1920s. Actually, this behavior on the part of the Jews of working to destroy the solidarity and homogeneity of a society they intend to penetrate and control is thousands of years old. It's in their genes. But in America, by the 1920s, it was open and very obvious. America was at that time a mixture of Celtic, Germanic, Slavic, and Mediterranean peoples, part Protestant and part Catholic, but all Europeans, all whites. The freed black slaves and their descendants had their own separate society. The Indians lived on reservations. It was a white country, and nearly everyone but the Jews assumed it would stay that way. We wanted it to stay that way. Most of our people never dreamed that anyone would want to force white Americans to accept their former African slaves as equals and encourage our daughters to bed down with these equals. We never dreamed that anyone was scheming to change our immigration laws so that they could block the flow of our people from Europe and instead bring in millions of Chinese and Vietnamese and Pakistanis and Haitians and Mexican mestizos and Soviet Jews and use them to destroy our cities and our neighborhoods and our schools and organize them into voting blocks for the purpose of disempowering and dispossessing us. We didn't dream that such a thing could happen or that anyone would want it to happen. We knew that Jews usually were up to no good, and we had signs at the doors of many of our better hotels and restaurants and business establishments. No Jews admitted. But most of us never dreamed that this clever but despicable minority would succeed in turning our society upside down, in capturing control of our government, in destroying our institutions, in suppressing our traditions and our values and our standards of behavior, and in making a multicultural pigsty of our country. We never dreamed that the day would come when white parents would be forced by law to send their 6-year-old daughters to school with little black monsters descended from their African slaves. And of course, in the 1920s, we never dreamed of television and of the destructive power of a Jew-controlled Hollywood. To be sure, some of our people did try to warn us. In the 1920s, the Iron Curtain of political correctness had not yet descended on our universities, and many historians, biologists, anthropologists, and other scholars were not afraid to write frankly about racial matters and Jewish matters. Unfortunately, it was all done very politely, in a very gentlemanly manner, and the average white voter never looked up from his funny papers. The Jews, on the other hand, were organizing and propagandizing at all levels, with 3,000 years of practice behind them. They were recruiting the most venal and unscrupulous elements among the Christian clergy, the most resentful, neurotic, and ambitious elements among the academics, the most empty-headed and trendy of the would-be intellectuals. They infiltrated our universities and took over whole departments. They bought our politicians by the hundreds. And, of course, they were buying up the mass media as fast as they could elbow their Gentile competitors out of the way. The culture war of the 1920s and 1930s was short and decisive. We never even took our gloves off, and they whipped us good. Then they were able to lie us into the Second World War, and after that, our goose was cooked. They used the dislocations associated with the war to introduce far-reaching changes into our society. And within 15 years after the war, they had our whole society in turmoil. And today, white children and white women are dragged to death behind cars being stolen by blacks. And the media keep it hushed up while saturating us with images of a few whites committing crimes against non-whites. And six-year-old, blonde, blue-eyed white girls are murdered in their classrooms by little black monsters who are treated as victims of a white racist society. And all the while, they hammer into us day and night with their media the defeatist notion that the multiculturalism they have imposed on us is here to stay, that there's nothing we can do about it, and so we had better get used to it. They believe that they've got us beaten down to the point now where nothing will make us rebel. Well, listen, Jew boys, you're dead wrong. Just let a few more of our women and children get butchered by your multicultural pets, and you'll see what we can do about it. The war isn't over, and this time, we'll fight with our gloves off. Payback day is coming. We'll start with the traitors among our own people, with the politicians and the journalists. But we will get around to you. Believe me, we will. Thanks for being with me again today.